19th century, when the gospel was restored, the literary arts provided a major form of entertainment, and poetry was prominent among them. All people, male or female, educated or uneducated, accepted poetry as a natural means of expression for the human soul. Many attempted their own hand at the writing of verse. It was understood and appreciated alike by the young and the old. In the early days of the church, there were a few great and passionate individuals who utilized poetry as a means of expressing their feelings about the gospel and of praising and expounding the truths they had found. The words of the gospel bear a kind of singing poetry of their own. Those men and women with the soul of a poet responded powerfully to this music of the eternities.
May peace and all that's good and true shed love and light and joy for you. May all thy days with hope be rife, thy faith increase through all thy life. May Father's Spirit fill thy heart, all pain and suffering depart. Oh, may he hear thy soul's appeal and place upon thy life his seal. May holy angels guard thy way through every night, through every day. Direct thy feet through life's dark maze, inspire thy heart to sing his praise.
Ellis was born in Davis County, Iowa, on the 20th of January, 1847, the year of the saint's first arrival in the valley of the Great Salt Lake. Her father, William Reynolds, was but 20 years old. Her mother, Anna Holly, was just 17. Ellis, named after her grandmother Holly, was their first child. The family was close-knit and prosperous, until a strange phenomenon in their neighborhood brought them to an unexpected crossroads. Long trains of refugee wagons appeared against the horizon, and the cry went up.
The Mormons are coming! Don't open your gates! Don't let them camp on your land! They'll steal everything they can get their hands on!
The Hollies were curious and kindly. They listened, then were baptized secretly in the woods, and their prosperity became like spilt milk as they suffered persecutions from their neighbors, were unable to sell their farms, and at last joined the saints in the great trek westward. As a child, Ellis found crossing the plains an interesting and delightful experience.
Each morning I wakened with pleasant expectations of newly shaped roadways. I would shout with delight over a Johnny Jump-Up, the wild pinks, the sweet William, and every tiny spike of green. Oh, verdant trees, green waving trees, now fanned by springtime's balmy breeze. What memories my fancy weaves amid thy young and shimmering leaves. The birdlings sing, their notes I greet, I hear the little lambkins bleat. I seem to see wild roses sweet, their petals dropping at my feet. Oh, blessed memories, now rife, they bring back joys of childhood life so free from worldly care and strife, the dearest, sweetest part of life.
The Reynolds and the Hollies both settled in Pleasant Grove, but by the time Ellis was 12, the mother she adored was dead. The weight of responsibility for the family fell on Ellis's shoulders, and she took it most seriously. She was 18 when her father remarried and moved to Mount Pleasant, and she felt there was no purpose in life for her anymore. But Brigham Young himself invited her to come live in his household, be as one of his own daughters, and obtain the education she longed for. Ellis called Brigham her beloved, honored foster father, and paid a ringing tribute to him.
My heart warms, and my eyes moisten, to the big heart, the generous consideration of that great man who lived to bless all the world as far as mortal power could reach. Directed by what seemed a divine instinct, he could read and understand the human heart. His vision could encompass all of mortal need in the great and vital things, and even unto the smallest detail of everyday life.
At this time, Carl G. Mazur was acting as private tutor to the young children, and the rare opportunity to study under this master spirit was all the training and educational discipline Ellis would receive. But the wealth of his intelligence and superior wisdom shared with his students was more than enough. When Ellis announced to Brother Brigham that she wanted to marry Milford Bard Shipp, he gave his consent, but he could see the pitfalls ahead. Bard Shipp had been married twice before, and though an eloquent speaker, he was often a harsh and controlling man. Ellis, just 19, felt her dreams had come true, for she had first developed a fondness for this cousin of her best friend when she was but 12. 2 boys were born to the couple, but while the younger was still an infant, he died. "Like a lovely little flower with a broken stem," Ellis wrote. 10 children were born to Ellis Shipp, and 4 of these died in their infancy. Anna, the daughter she was finally blessed with, died at 1.5 years, and Ellis slipped into a period of ill health and spiritual suffering that is reflected in these lines.
"When I see a happy mother with her infant on her knee, oh, 'tis hard my grief to smother, for no sweet babe smiles on me. No bright eyes beam upon me with their innocent, pure light. They're beaming now in heaven, far from my loving sight. No sweet voice says, 'My mama.' No soft hand on my brow to still its weary throbbing. I have no Anna now."
Brigham Young had announced that the women of Zion would be sent east to study medicine, and both he and Eliza Arsnoe urged Ellis to go. She was very reluctant to leave her little ones, terrified of working on human cadavers, and worried that she could not do the demanding work. But her patriarchal blessing and a blessing from the prophet helped to settle her mind. Despite the press of inadequate family finances, Ellis left for Philadelphia in November of 1875. She learned to her delight that she could do the work and excel. But at the end of the first year, Milford came to collect her and insisted she undergo an examination, at the end of which the doctors came out shaking their heads. "Go home," they said. "You may not live 6 months longer. Your heart is actually skipping beats." With this dire pronouncement ringing in her ears and weighing at her heart, Ellis went home with her husband, but she knew in her heart that she must fulfill the challenge and complete the training to do this great work. Her husband was less than enthusiastic about the idea. There was little money available, and she was with child. Under these circumstances, what in the world should she do? She returned to Philadelphia, sold dress forms from door to door to support herself, stayed late in the public buildings at night to save fuel and candlelight, gave birth to her child, and graduated with honors. But she did not do this alone. When the doctors discovered her condition, they urged her to end the pregnancy and get on with her work. She records in her journal,
"I spent the entire night on my knees, praying for guidance and strength, knowing I could not do this without my Heavenly Father's help. As dawn broke through the window, my answer came. 'I have come to learn how to save life,' I would tell them, 'not to take it.'"
Ellis was 31 years old. She had borne 6 children and buried 2. She held the distinction of being the second woman doctor in all of Utah. She had proven that a woman can dream grand dreams and mold those dreams into reality. Home! She was going home again, with her babe on her knee after 2 long years of separation from her children. In a fever of longing, she expressed her pent-up emotions in poetry.
"On, on we go with lightning speed, and yet the pace seems slow. I pass each mile with avid greed. What joys I soon will know. So soon to fold my treasures here, close to this beating heart, with boundless joy and welling tear, my wealth of love impart.
Ellis established her own practice in May of 1878 and helped in organizing the LDS Deseret Hospital in 1882. The following November, a few days after Thanksgiving, her son, Bert Reynolds Shipp, died. There is no mention of this loss in Ellis's journal or papers. She did not even record the births of her four children, who came during this period of time. But the death of Bert must have been a difficult blow, for he was the child she weaned and left in order to pursue her education. But now, especially since her husband had left for medical school in Philadelphia himself, Ellis ingeniously contrived to be with her children as much as possible, taking them to the office with her, and out through the valley on calls to mothers in labor and others in need of medical aid. By 1885, Dr. Shipp was working at the hospital, running her own practice, and teaching classes in nursing. In March, a new little son was born, but lived only a few hours. Her children seemed to possess an uncanny understanding of their mother and the challenges she faced, and with their limited maturity, supported her all they could. She records in her autobiography,
"If honors should ever come from the practice of my profession, my beloved sons should share them. They cared for my infants, kept our apartments in order, watched the telephone, carried the messages to me. On one momentous day, through the aid of these two alert boys, I attended 5 maternity cases in 24 hours, all from first to last, ending successfully. On returning from the last, with a keen sense of satisfaction and sublimest gratitude, I found my beloved assistants on the watchtower with everything ready for Mother to find her needed rest. And while I slept, behind locked doors, the entrance was guarded that I should not be disturbed."
Her 7-year-old daughter, Ellis, wrote this little note to her mother.
"Dear Mama, Aaliyah and I are very lonely without you, and I want you to come home right now. The boys left us all alone and let the fire go out, and we put some coal in the fire stove and we made a nice fire and thought you were coming home. Good night from your kind and loving daughter, Ellis R. Shipp."
Aaliyah later stated,
"How many times, all hours of the night, Mother arose from her own sickbed to go to administer aid to some woman in labor, or take comfort to some patient not so sick as herself.
Scatter your flowers in paths of the living, now, while they may enjoy the perfume. Give, while warm lips may respond to the giving. Wait not to strew them on bier and on tomb. Utter the words thy spirit is prompting. Breathe gentle tones of sympathy sweet. Soothe the sad heart that breaks with its aching. Guide now in love the wandering feet. Pour in the soul the balm of believing, faith in mankind and the Maker above. Let not life's vanities ever deceiving make thee forget the greatness of love. Scatter the flowers of love for the living, kind words and deeds through life's flitting hours. Give for the grace and the goodness of giving. Scatter sweet flowers, oh, scatter sweet flowers."
Ellis had written as a young woman,
"My heart is too susceptible of sorrow. It breaks down beneath a burden that some would carry with ease."
She had also made the statement,
"I feel it an honor and privilege to do good in the kingdom."
She was coming into her own. Her gifts were flowering and her spirit becoming deep and rich through the heartfelt service she gave. But Ellis paid the price for her growth toward perfection. In her journal, she recorded, under date of January 8th, 1872.
Rise at 4 in the morning. Dress. Make a fire. Wash in cold water. Comb my hair. Clean my teeth. Write a few lines in my journal. A letter to grandmother. Read a chapter in Dr. Gunn. Read a few extracts from Johnson. Dress the children. Make bed, sweep, dust, and prepare my room for the breakfast table. Breakfast at 9. Sew on the machine until 3, dinner hour. After dinner, call on Sister Jones, who is sick. Wash and prepare the children for bed. From 6 till 8, knit or do some other light work. Review my actions for the day. Offer my devotions to heaven. And retire at 9.
Poetry was certainly a source of strength and solace, a necessary outlet for this woman whose powers of giving and doing, serving and enduring, were continually taxed. When her volume of verse was published, Ellis Shipp chose the title Life Lines, embodying in those two words the rich role poetry played in her life. In September 1889, Ellis's last child, Nellie, was born. Ellis was 42. Her next youngest child, living, was 10. Milford and Ellis Shipp both became doctors. In 1888, Milford started the Salt Lake Sanitarian, a monthly journal, of which Ellis was an editor and a frequent contributor. All through her life, but perhaps more as she grew older, Ellis wrote poems of comfort and encouragement, poems of congratulation and poems of blessing to her friends. Many of the recipients of her friendship and love did the same. It was a gentle, intimate way in which the deepest sentiments of the heart could be expressed, and friendship acted as a strength and a balm when it was sorely needed. To Emmeline B. Wells, editor of Woman's Exponent, she wrote,
"You ask me now to speak of her, the one we all love well as Zion's lady editor, that old-time story-tell. How wonderful to us it seemed that she could do so much. How truly were her powers esteemed. Her fine poetic touch that beautified and thrilled each soul that crossed her daily path, a nature under God's control, inspiring holy faith."
And in another poem, addressed to her, we know simply as Clara.
"No grander dress was ever worn. No brighter gem could e'er adorn the form of lovely womanhood than to be pure and true and good. And this is why we love you so. Because your noble heart we know. Because we feel when you are near, our hearts rebound with hope and cheer. Our Clara dear is fair and true. Life's sweetest flowers her path bestrew. Her gentle ways and winning grace hath won in every heart a place."
Ellis Shipp practiced medicine and established a nursing school which had run for 60 consecutive years. She brought over 6,000 babies into the world. And this was not half an hour in the delivery room, but several trips to the home of the patient. Perhaps cooking a pot of soup if there was nothing to eat, doing up a batch of laundry for the family. She served freely and with love.
"Oh, I am blessed. My thoughts abound with reverent love and gratitude that through my daily life I've found so much that's beautiful and good."
Many young converts came to the Valley unable to afford the $50 fee to take classes and qualify as a midwife. One woman relates,
"Before I went to her class, we were so poor. My children went hungry. Mothers and newborn babies were dying all around me. If I could just study in Dr. Shipp's class and become a nurse and midwife, I could help my family and do some good in the world. But it cost $50 and I had a crying baby in my arms. But I wanted to go so badly. At last, I went to see Dr. Shipp. She put her arm around me and said, "Of course you can come. You don't need any money. Come, I'll help you." And we went. And she held my squirming baby on her lap while she lectured to us so I could take notes. I never paid her a cent, not even eggs. I was a new convert to the church from Germany, and I could hardly understand or speak English. She was so patient, spelling out words for us and telling us what they meant. I helped bring a lot of babies into the world after I got through. Oh, how I loved her.
In 1936, on her 89th birthday and again on her 90th, Ellis was honored at a Lion House luncheon. In her twilight years, many honors of distinction came her way, including induction into the Women's Hall of Fame by the Federation of Women's Clubs in 1938. This quiet, determined young woman, whom the doctors had sent home because her heart was skipping beats, had lived 90 years of usefulness and joy.
To live, kind Father, just while I can execute the trust of mortal life in usefulness, so long as I can others bless, no longer do I ask. When usefulness is o'er, when I can help and soothe no more, nor ease the burdens others bear, nor mitigate their pain and care, I wish to go to Thee. When that time comes, take me to realms of immortality. Renew my useful powers then, so I can live and work again, for that would heaven be.
On January 20th, 1939, Ellis celebrated her 92nd birthday. A few days later, she began to fail, and on the last day of January, her spirit took flight. Of the 6,000 babies she brought into the world, she lost only one mother, in a case where she was called to assist too late. It is nearly impossible to grasp such a record in terms of the individual experience it encompassed. Ellis herself commented,
"Reverently unto God, I give my gratitude for the successful practice of medicine in its many branches for the span of more than 50 years. For more than 6,000 times have I felt the exquisite bliss of seeing the mother's smile when for the first time she clasped her treasure in her arms."
When Dr. Shipp died, there were thousands of dollars owing her. With a gentleness in her eyes, she told her children,
"When people have sickness, they are having trouble enough. They should not be burdened with a single thought of debt. I want these books burned."
She knew whereof she spoke, for her own life had been one of struggle to obtain the financial means she and her family needed. Her daughter, Ellis, in paying tribute to her mother, said,
"Mother, I wish I could kneel at your feet today and look into your beautiful eyes, as deep as wells and as piercing as an arrow, as tender as a wild rose petal, and caress your hands, those magic hands. 8 times you have come to my bed to bring me safely through the Valley of Shadow. You always knew just how to hold my back so it wouldn't hurt so much. And no matter how your own back might have been aching, it wasn't too much to give all of your strength to me."
Ellis's oldest daughter, Olia, wrote of her mother,
"Is there any end to the marvels you can tell about Mother? Love, endurance, sacrifice. She had absolutely conquered herself. Her every thought was for humanity, for you. What would you like? What do you need?"
Ellis Shipp had reached and surpassed her goal of serving and giving to others. She came to live in a Christ-like manner, the ideals she expressed in these lines from her poem entitled Love Divine.
And if a heart is sore with sting from slight or words unkind, may I the balm of solace bring, their wounds to soothe and bind. Oh, help me love humanity and all its virtues see. For those who love most tenderly are surely most like thee.
Ellis Shipp closed her own life story with the following prayer.
Great minds are they who suffer not in vain. Oh, I would hope I have suffered not in vain. I do not feel my spirit great, but oh, I have suffered, and I pray it has never been in vain.